This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Hi. I first want to thank Jean-Michel and Aaron and Osvaldo for inviting me here to speak among such scholars. Bill doesn't call himself a scholar, but I think we all think he is. I think that the foundation is superb. I'm knocked out by it, by the fact that there's such a lot to do, and we've got such a few people here, really. But I've been made to feel at home, even in the short time that I've been here. So, if we could... It is difficult, if not impossible, to find other terms for Duchamp's category, called infrathin, just as it is with Joyce's epiphany. And looking at the world of our senses in that way, through the infrathin space and the epiphany, we find that these moments are far from trivialities. And so, like the words portmanteau and Duchamp's use of the term apparition, it is easier to give concrete examples, like Duchamp's gratuitousness of the little weight, infrathin, spider web. Not the web, but the webs that look like grey-white cloth. Reflection from a mirror or glass, flat, convex, infrathin separation, better than screen, because it indicates interval taken in one sense and screen taken in another sense. Separation has two senses, male and female, watered silk, iridescence, subway gates, the people who go through at the very last moment, infrathin. In the second chapter of his excellent study, Joyce's Book of the Dark, John Bishop writes about Finnegan's Wake, using metaphors from photography and also from sleep, like negative, nothingness, darkness, absence, light eternal, dreams, stages of blindness and blinking, and calls it on nothing in particular. Scotographically arranged in plain blotch and void on the blink pitch, eyelids blinking only, this nat language, not language, now generates as a totality a kind of portraiture, opposite in every particular from that afforded by the photograph and related forms of representation, antonymically inverting the sense of photography, Greek photographia, light writing. Joyce's sleep descriptive scotography, Greek skotos, darkness, makes for a kind of darkness writing, whose developed product, the inversion of a well-articulated positive print, is a partly obliterated negative that captures the real absence of an extremely black prince. The black prince, now extinct, who lies reduced to nothing in the naught time, and so can only be captured in black prints. Where the photograph taken through the open-eyed lens of the camera lucida seeks to freeze the plenitude of the present in all its fleeting detail, the Wakeian scotograph taken through black-eye lenses kept as firmly shut beneath a blind of black sailcloth as those of the eyes in sleep seeks to capture only the absent. Almost everything Duchamp did was connected intellectually and visually with black and white photography and chess. And by means of his chiaroscuro coalesce, Finnegan's Wake 107-29, Joyce casts light on Duchamp's project as Duchamp casts light on Joyce's. Light and darkness are the critical metaphors in Bishop's text, light being the Rosetta Stone of science. Science and technology are common metaphors in Duchamp's and Joyce's works, and are therefore also a central motif of my own early researches into writing and image making, which relies almost solely on photographs, evoking further terms like reproduction, scanning, insight, and unsightliness. T.S. Eliot, Duchamp, and Joyce have much in common in their attitude towards the creative act, in which a kind of negative spontaneity of depersonalized absenting of self meets on another plane with the negative spontaneity of desperate involvement with nothingness and triviality. Taking depersonalization away, we begin to feel in Duchamp and Joyce the impact of the complex ambiguity and precision that is characteristic of their generous attitude toward both nominalism and universalism that reestablishes the conditions of laughter and the unexpected in an effort to capture the absent, and in which Joyce, as Bishop suggests, was in fact a writer of strong realist allegiances. As the evidence of everything he wrote before Finnegan's Wake attests, Joyce would have beheld in the darker parts of sleep the paradoxical spectacle of an undeniably real human experience. You were there, within which reality, experience, and all human knowing mutually vanished into a state that the Wake calls, with contradictory precision, real absence. That's from page 43 of John Bishop's book. For Duchamp and Joyce, especially Joyce, in light of his marking epiphanies as trivialities that made Stephen think of collecting many such moments together in a book, the aesthetic moment in its purest form is poetry as an essence, and like poetry, suspends our consciousness of time and mortality, as in sleep or real absence, remembered as a nothingness, the unspeakable, or that, as Wittgenstein put it, of which we cannot speak. John Bishop contends that sleep is a nothingness and a dream we experience every day, whose triviality is made total against all kinds of pounds and pence and sounds and scents, but in which Joyce detects precisely in the trivial of a day, for example, the richest of revelations. In discussing Mallarmé, Bradford Cook writes, "Nothingness, then, because it is Mallarmé's metaphysical constant, became his aesthetic unity, the real or unreal, whatever meaning those words may now contain, is a one, which the artist can approach or elicit only through the many, like the response which a Baudelaire would elicit through the correspondences of several faculties. The Marlanian aesthetic in action is the countless series of exchanges and correspondences between this one and many. How to produce the many? How to make something out of nothing? Here Mallarmé, the stylist and metaphysician, are scrupulous heirs to the French classical tradition. How to produce the many and how to return to the one? These are the interpenetrative and chief problems. Trivialities are next to and almost good for nothing. Hence Bishop's subtitle for his second chapter, Nothing in Particular. Textually, scientifically, pataphysically even, Duchamp sought what he called the infrathin or inframince, the epiphany in his notes too slim to be nothing, as a consequence of a search for the fourth dimension in the bride stripped bare by her bachelor's evening. While Bishop writes in a continuation of the second quotation that I gave earlier, he, Joyce, would no more have refrained from rendering real absence legibly particular in his Book of the Dark than his surrogate, Shem the Penman, who gives unsolicited testimony on behalf of the absent to those present in a never-seen, wake-like edition de tenebra, the edition of darkness. Indeed, as Finnegan's Wake neared its completion, Joyce spoke of having built it out of nothing. Both Joyce and Duchamp avoided contemporary and preferred temporary taste, which is another way of drawing attention to the major condition of trivial change and trivial truth that bespeaks the importance of Joyce's writing in Ulysses, and more particularly Finnegan's Wake, as well as the notes Duchamp accumulated inside and outside the glass. Duchamp and Joyce's works are about the trivially true, in the same way Wittgenstein's propositions on language are in his Philosophical Investigations. As if we have any doubts as to the unique associations of the trivial we find in Duchamp and Joyce, we should consider Paul Matisse on Duchamp's Green Box Notes and Duchamp's use of the term épanouissement therein. Épanouissement is one of the most important and evocative words in Duchamp's texts. It is usually translated as blossoming. Our only available English equivalent. And yet, blossoming fails to translate the original in at least two ways. In the first place, blossoming is a word that we usually associate with the flowering of plants and the happy development of young children. In French, on the other hand, the meaning of the word épanouissement begins with the idea of opening out, of expansion or development, although it can be used to describe the flowering or fulfillment of a dream or an explosion's shockwaves. It is a word full of power. When it is used to describe the growth of feelings, it acquires a further association, for it differs by only a single letter from évanouissement, which means fainting, the opposite of épanouissement. And because of this relationship, there is a sexual element implicit in epanousmont. It includes the arousal of sensual feelings and then their gradual intensification and expansion until that point at which the experience passes over into the state quite perfectly described by evanouissement, or perhaps the little death. That's from Marcel Duchamp's notes. That's Paul Matisse's notes. Nothingness. The wholes held together by words in Duchamp and Joyce's writing is maintainable by our accumulation of trivialities. Particles of trivia and nonsense, as Bishop puts it in discussing Finnegan's Wake as a whole. Nonsense that conceals latent and apocalyptic senses which lie not on the lines but between them, and not in any literal sense, but in outlets. In Duchamp, the densities of cross-references in his art constitute non-linear potential readings, using the gaps in language, but not as a Saussurean hypogram, but rather infrathins that lie in between words. John Bishop concretizes nothing like this. As Joyce's contemporaries were showing in countless ways over the two decades during which he sustained the writing of Finnegan's Wake, nothingness is a formative trait and invention of the human, non-existent in a material reality that keeps on pouring forth stars, seasons, and generations of species with plentiful regularity. It seems not to exist outside of human minds, except when human minds themselves, invested with the capability of knowing it, choose to implant it there. Since individuals tutored in all those words and abilities layered up over the Indo-European route men seem able to know nothing only in the real absence of the night, the experience of sleep becomes, at the wake, the concrete reality out of which the whole category of nothingness imminently wells. Sleep's real absence is the experience of nothing really endured in particular. To undergo the trivial, on the one hand, one relies on a special state of consciousness, both precise and inexact, Duchamp's phrase, made of hides and hints and misses in prints, Joyce's phrase. Secondary elaboration is the name Freud gave to the unifying activity that seeks to halt the differentiating processes at work in the unconscious, which tries to impose meaning on the movements of signifying chains. The vesting laws of language, condensation and displacement, related to syntax, and representability, related to semantics, are, according to Freud, processes of the subconscious that can be examined by interpreting dreams or explicating jokes, both of which are tainted by repression and a term Duchamp loved to use, delay. His subtitle for The Bride Stripped Bare by Her Bachelor's Even, or Delay in Glass, or Glass Lady. Joyce delays the arrival of the letter in Finnegan's Wake, as John Bishop suggests. The letter buried in that body which Finnegan's Wake takes as its subject has the same latent, because infantile, content as a dream, and it is written in a lappish, childish, more of whose peculiar inflections we are now in a position to understand, though it will reach the dreamer only next morning. A huge chain envelope, written in seven diverse stages of ink, from Blanche Essence to Lavandiette, every pothook and pancrook bespeaking the wisher-wife, superscribed and sub-penciled by yours a laughable party, with afterwrite S.A.G. to hide and cheek, Edinburgh. The trivial is made succinct, where everything noble, manifest about this letter, is merely its envelope, a complexly linked chain, huge chain, of trivial materials, pots and pans, within which lies a message, lurking dormant, and striving to get out by hook or crook, pothook and pancrook. Superscribed and subpenciled, this dormant message lies somewhere between the lines, above and below them, so that it conveys meaning like a dream, a slip of the tongue, or a word delivered with tongue in cheek. Both Duchamp and Joyce avoided directed metaphors used to describe the unconscious, since these would be suspect, because doomed to failure in a playfulness where triumph over the rules that forbid ambiguity instead rely on the pun that is a category of the supplement, the frivolous, in order to canonize the comical, the unimportant, the trivial, the useless. If the glass works at all, it does so weakly, through its language. And like Roussel's machines and Jarry's protagonists, Finnegan's Wake is aware of a similar trait of frailty. Joyce confiding once to Jacques Mercanton that his whole book was shaky. Against this, however, the one and the many, the trivial and the universal, can be powerful tools in the right hands. Duchamp once wrote that Dada was an extreme protest against the physical side of painting. It was a metaphysical attitude. It was intimately and consciously involved with literature. It was a sort of nihilism, to which I am still very sympathetic. It was a way to get out of a state of mind, to avoid being influenced by one's immediate environment or by the past, to get away from clichés, to get free. The blank force of Dada was very salutary. It told you, don't forget, you're not quite so blank as you think you are. As if to agree with this, John Bishop himself notes that a sustained reading of Finnegan's Wake actually does manage to draw a reader deeply into a blank memory of the percepted naught, experienced in the night. And in doing so, it opens all manner of inquiry into what precisely the vacant mind could have been about in those parts of its life when it seemed not to be there at all. By probing into these extents of emptiness, moreover, ignored by most writers on dreams, Joyce fathomlessly deepened the mountainy molehill of the night, finding there much more than the primitive reasoning of the dreams which so compelled the attention of Vico Freud, Lévi-Brull, and other students of the savage mind. In reconstructing the nocturnal life, he was also exercising the whole 20th century fascination with nothingness. "My eyes are tired," he wrote to his son Giorgio 3 years before he completed Finnegan's Wake. "For over half a century they have gazed into nullity, where they have found a lovely nothing." It is possible to see strong effects of dissociation in the world of Joyce's and Duchamp's art, a reversible and hinged separation into simpler but then subsequently wonderfully complex stylistic constituents, focusing on problems of mechanism, motion, geometry, eroticism, Pequot tinting, the trivial, the ephemeral, the fourth dimension, and pataphysics, and what, concerning Joyce, Bishop calls the invisible force of fluidity itself, which is ever flowing on the times, writes Joyce. We find associations with the feminine rather than the masculine, since their work escapes traditional phallocentric mastery and control. Duchamp and Joyce create ambiances and silent gaps where communication is difficult and laughter is essential and sometimes cruel. Things exist in linked isolation without freedom to move, while at the same time motion is pervasive everywhere in their work. But this tendency to motility is consistently interrupted and frustrated. Words and things seem to stand in isolation, waiting simultaneously to be liberated and conjoined. Duchamp and Joyce sought a pedagogic and aesthetic center of focus in a dialectical exchange between song, as in poetry, and in the surface eccentricities of their writing and art. As a coordinate of aesthetic distance, the spectator, as an ultimate of such art, must develop this fourth dimensional point. Purely imaginary in locus, this point is to be developed mentally out of the work, and primarily, of course, the words. This aesthetic center of focus is reached by intuition insofar as it is an absolute of Duchamp and Joyce's art. As Bergson says, it follows that an absolute can be reached only by an intuition, whereas the rest of our knowledge arises out of analysis. We call intuition the sympathy by which one transports oneself to the interior of an object in order to coincide with its unique and therefore ineffable quality. The fourth dimension in modernism is both momentous and trivial, but then too is the sound of our own bloodstream, as indicated in The Wake. Duchamp's and Joyce's language use and calembours are essentially what brought them to give up determining signifieds for us in place of an art coefficient, always on the brink of a total non-functioning. Brissette's involuntary pataphysics of the word were far less conscious than Duchamp's or Joyce's. And yet, paradoxically, Duchamp used Brissette's influence by turning them inside out, like the bachelors that are gas molds out of which the ineffable emerges in a delay of the imaginable. Guillaume Apollinaire, writing on Alfred Jarry and Jubilation, was surely also writing about Joyce and Duchamp when he wrote the following: "There is no term to apply to this particular elation, allégresse, in which satire directed towards reality so overreaches its object that it destroys it and rises to a level that poetry can scarcely attain. Meanwhile, triviality turns out to be in perfect taste and even, by an inconceivable state of things, becomes essential." Motto, Duchamp. My thought was to reduce, reduce, reduce. I had put likewise, but now I think the opposite. Add, add, add. That's it.
But I was like,